The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the simplest, most powerful website creator that helps you make headlines with your own stunning online presence. Explore elegant templates, Getty image integration, and more at squarespace.com and use the code Guardian to get 10% off.
Bring me my staff of burning gold. Bring me my klaxon of desire. There's big games on the way, listener. Manchester Derby, United clocking up the wins. City's good performances, as rare as a newborn Gary. What will happen as they face off? And can Liverpool still take fourth off City? Down at the bottom, a 3-3 thriller for Villa against QPR. While Rangers take on Chelsea next, Sherwood unleashes his Benteke Taka against his old side Spurs. Ooh, we coo and purr over these and other top fixtures, then sound clever by talking continental bits too. And AFCON, Cup of Nations, football tournament awarded to oil-rich, democratically challenged nations. Shocker. All that, plus your posts and tweets in this Full Weekly Extra. Here's the pod lineup you weren't expecting, listener, but you're going to be delighted when I unveil, orally speaking, Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Hi, Paul. It's been too long. You're looking well, though.
Thanks very much.
Excellent.
So are you, I should probably say.
Oh, thanks very much. Well, you know.
Formality obliges.
Yeah. And Barry Glendening's here.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Nice to see you. And Philippe Auclair.
Present.
Great news. Ça va, Philippe?
Ça va, toi?
Oui, there we go. Excellent. Now, there's lots for us to talk about. There's been plenty of action, you know, a game every night, not just in England, but some big cup action right across the continent as well. And there's some mighty fixtures on the way. Should we start with the Manchester Derby? Should we start there? Given what happened, I think, to Man City at Crystal Palace, and given the magnitude of the fixture that awaits them this weekend, let's begin with them, shall we? Who saw the Crystal Palace Man City game?
I did.
Excellent, Barry. What did you think?
I wasn't entirely shocked by the result. When the game ended, I was left rueing the fact that I hadn't had a little bet on Crystal Palace.
Right.
Manchester City seem to be a mess. They've got a lot of, I think, players who are just sort of a bit too well-fed and comfortable and rich and not hungry for success or titles or trophies. I think possibly they consider Selhurst Park to be one of those grounds that maybe it's beneath them to go and
really
muddy their spats on a Monday night. And Crystal Palace were always going to give them a decent game. I mean, City could argue with no little justification that they should have had a penalty for a Glenn Murray handball that the referee didn't see because he was badly positioned. But overall, I thought it was a fair result. And again, as I said, it wasn't a huge surprise.
Glenn Murray putting it through Joe Hart's legs after about half an hour of total City dominance to open the scoring. And then that wonderful free kick from Jason Puncheon. All rather splendid. And another success for Alan Pardew. I look at top teams and feel like I could do that job better than I am seeing it done, says the Pardiola.
Well, he's done brilliantly at Palace, and he has exposed the limitations of Neil Warnock, who, when under him, Palace were a reflection of him. They could set up in a nice shape and pass the ball sideways and do things. But he is Pardew has released their potential by getting to play with the sort of confidence that he himself exudes, while retaining all the solidity, and they're a really good side.
Yeah, absolutely. Glenn Murray reborn, Jason Puncheon rediscovered. Who are Palace playing? Oh, they're playing Sunderland.
Yes, it's at the Stadium of Light, where Sunderland have only won 3 fixtures this season. I'm not at all confident. I'm never really confident of a Sunderland win, but you know, they go into the game on the back of a derby win over Newcastle, but after their last 3 derby wins over Newcastle, they've lost the following game, and I wouldn't be particularly surprised to lose this one either. They didn't play very well against Newcastle, but won. But, you know, that Newcastle team didn't take a whole lot of beating.
Right, okay. Well, for Manchester City, meanwhile, all sorts of questions about Pellegrini now. Will visit to palace, hasten changing of the guard, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And next up, whew, it's only the derby. Now, the thing is, they've won the last four of these, but their numbers coming into this particular clash with United, who are in bang-up form, are pretty awful. They've had four straight defeats on the road in all competitions. I think only four wins in the last 14 games, Philippe.
Yeah, that's correct, yes. And the one thing I found a bit concerning as well against Palace, given the amazing amount of possession that they had. You know, sometimes teams, you say they play handball. You know, this is what people used to say about Barcelona. And I had a feeling of looking...
Especially when Thierry was there.
Yeah. I had a feeling sometimes of watching a not very good rugby team. You know, those which carry the ball, a phase, another phase, then somebody picks the ball, runs 1 yard, is knocked back two. And so it was face to face to face, but they couldn't actually progress through the field at all. They seem completely bereft of any ideas. And there's so many players who are way, way behind where they should be. I mean, Dzeko was appalling, I think. Jesus Navas was not particularly good. Sami Anasri hasn't been in the team. Came back in a chair. Had some impact when he came back on. And there's always the problem with the defence as well. You wonder where the defence has gone, which is the defence on which Roberto Mancini had built a title-winning side,
right,
and which seems to have evaporated.
And Aguero, of course, who had been away in the international break, hasn't scored now for, is it 511 minutes in the Premier League? It was a very long time anyway.
Yeah.
Was some surprise that Pellegrini had chosen not to include Jovetic or particularly Boney even on the substitutes bench?
Yes. I have absolutely no explanation. I mean, for Jovetic, she would have an explanation. He hasn't been exactly pulling trees, as they said. For Boney, given that, you know, he'd broken his duck in the Premier League, that he could offer something a little bit different, perhaps. But no, I have no explanation to give for that. But to be honest, they look really... It's amazing to think that, I think, 1st of January, they were equal on points, goals scored and goals conceded with Chelsea. And since then.
Absolutely.
What the most surprising to me is the fact that, for example, James Milner is not a regular starter in that team, but that's a personal quibble I have with Mr. Pellegrini.
Did you see the stat about them coming from behind? No? Jay Baptista, 89%. I think Mr. Chip was the first person I to come up with this, but Jay Baptista, 89, says two great stats from the weekend. The first was, City have not won away from home in the Premier League after trailing at half-time in 20 years. That's 86 matches. That's a big number. The other stat, in case you're interested, it doesn't relate to the Premier League. It's without Mathieu's two goals, one in the Clásico and the winner this weekend, Barcelona would have four less points. Without Leo Messi's 32 goals, Barcelona would have four less points. Isn't that interesting?
Oh.
Isn't that interesting? But anyway, more perhaps on Spain later on.
Sorry, just in, while we're on stats, just in response to what Philippe said there about City being level on points, goals scored and goals conceded with Chelsea at, what was it, Christmas?
Is it 1st of January?
Well, morning of the January
difference
the 10th,
now
actually.
Is only actually four goals. They're still level on goals scored and Chelsea have conceded 26 while City have conceded 30, but that's still 9 points difference, those four goals.
Right. Is it going to be like that after they face United this weekend, Barry? What's going to happen?
I think they will lose.
Who is they?
I think Manchester City will lose.
Right.
Their form on the road is abysmal. They're facing a team that's playing as well as it has all season. They've won, 9 out of 10? And I just don't think the hunger is there in City's players. I don't think they care. And, you know, Newcastle's players are so abject they couldn't rouse themselves to give it a go against Sunderland in the derby last weekend. And I can see possibly the same thing happening here.
Paul?
Yeah, well, United are definitely playing better than City at the moment. You'd like to think City do still have a good performance somewhere in them, particularly Aguero against Phil Jones, possibly could give him the run around. But if I was putting money on it, I'd put it on United.
Even though the form book surely has gone out the window, this being a derby.
Well, but then my money may be going out the window.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Philippe, you're...
Well, I have to concur.
Right.
It's quite remarkable the fact that this spring coming to Manchester, the red side of it, has coincided with Van Gaal finding his best team almost by chance. And because he will probably want us to believe that it was all part of a grand plan of finding the right personnel. But it helps when you can take Falcao, Di Maria and Van Persie out of the equation for, to start with, and then suddenly you've got a proper team developing with partnerships absolutely all over the pitch, looking very, very impressive. It would be interesting, by the way, to see what he does with Robin Van Persie this weekend.
Oh, is he fit again?
He's fit again. He trained yesterday, so he should be on the bench.
Right.
The consensus, basically, is that the form book has hit the window and then sort of slowly slid down the glass
and stayed
and landed
inside
on the
room.
Floor inside the room.
Oh, that's interesting. Of course, if City lose this game and Liverpool, they're hosting Newcastle, which from what you're saying, Barry, sounds like 3 points there, that gap between the top four and Liverpool suddenly doesn't look so big at all. It would be just 4 points between them and Man City with six games to go. That's very doable. And of course, Liverpool are back, aren't they, Paul?
They won, which was against Blackburn last night, which is a good start, which is what they obviously needed to do. But there's still obvious deficiencies in the team, such as goal scoring, which has been a problem for them all season, and which is the reason why you wouldn't put a huge amount of confidence in them going on winning their last seven games to nick fourth spot, even if City do slip up. Daniel Sturridge is he's still looking very rusty, willing but rusty. Raheem Sterling, one of his deficiencies, despite all his obvious potential, is he's not a good finisher. And Mario Balotelli and so that
he's hot under the collar.
Maybe he certainly is.
Yeah. So,
but they do have a quite an easy fixture list. Of the teams in the top half of the table, they've only got one. I mean, it's Chelsea, but that's the only top half of the table side they have to face between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I'm not sure any fixture is particularly easy for Liverpool at the moment. Although, having said that, Blackburn, as well as they defended last night, they didn't do the one thing that Man United and Arsenal did to Liverpool in recent games, which was really harass the defence by pressing them high up early on, and on a bobbly pitch. I thought that they might have had some success doing that, because there's definite panic in Liverpool's defence recently, certainly in the last two games. But they weren't put under that sort of pressure. Even Gestede put them on under pressure when he came on. They were just launching long balls to him, but that's a different type of pressure. It's not stopping them from playing out from the back, which is so Toure and Lovren actually had a good game last night.
Newcastle, they still have the same crisis of absentees through suspension and injury that we talked about before, Stephen Taylor being out
because Colicini's out. They basically fielded an almost entirely makeshift back four against Sunderland, and the players that did play with, I've said this before, a couple of notable exceptions, maybe two notable exceptions, were awful. Like, just no heart, no fight, and no discernible sign of any skill or ability either. So it's difficult to see them getting a result. It'll be interesting to see how they react to all the criticism they've had from their fans in the last week. Newcastle fans are actually planning a boycott of their game against Spurs, which is on TV, not this weekend, but Sunday week. It's the 4 o'clock game on Sky, and fans are trying to arrange that nobody go, just to show the world what it.
Ah, I see. So rather than the fact they can just watch it at home anyway, it's to actually get the message out to the world's viewers.
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously, season ticket holders will sacrifice the money they've already paid, sit this one out, and it's just to draw attention to the fact that their club is just shuffling around like a zombie. It'll be interesting to see how many people embrace the protest and stay away.
All right, there you go.
And the one thing for Liverpool, you were talking about, Sturridge and Sterling not doing the job, but the defence, they've lost Mamadou Sakho as well with a hamstring injury. He's already been injured there, so he could be out for a while. Schürrle is still suspended. Kolo Touré doesn't look necessarily the most, he has lapses of concentration. So he had found a new balance with this 3-4-3 because of injuries and suspension. He can't really use it anymore, so he reverts to back four. I don't know. I mean, beating 1-0 a Blackburn team, I think they were missing something like 12 players because of injuries, illness, and cup ineligibility. Well, that's not exactly extraordinary, is it?
Right.
Having to rely yet again on the marvellous strike by Phil Coutinho. So.
Where do you stand on Mamadou Sakho? Because I'm a big fan, and I think he's been really good in the last few months. But he seems to be quite a divisive character. A lot of people think he's a liability.
Mm.
And I don't see it. I think he's been really good, and they will miss him.
He's a stopper. He's not a third centre-back in the back three. He's not. He's never been trained, coached to do that. What he does, yes, he's a great stopper. He's wonderfully athletic. He's actually quite clever. He's not the best at distributing the ball. We all know that. But that's not his strength. His strength, as Kevin Keegan put it memorably, is his strength.
Why did Brendan Rodgers buy him then?
Well, you could say the same about Simon Mignolet, who is a good shot stopper, but he doesn't have one attribute that you think a Brendan Rodgers goalkeeper should have. He's rubbish with his feet.
Mm. All right. Ooh. Anyway, might be enough against Newcastle, after which I'm guessing the suspensions for Gerrard and Skrtel will have expired, so we shall see. Anyway, that's it for part one. Loads more after this.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Also this weekend in the Premier League, Swansea hosting Everton. Best of luck to both of them. Doesn't really have any great bearing on the league, does it?
Managers will want to win. I mean, both managers. I mean, Gary Monk, you know, he's done very well this season, despite my occasional carping that he should have done better. But he'll clearly want, you know, just for his own profile as well as the club, to finish as high as possible. And, you know, so...
Everton, do you know, they've won four of their last five games quietly. I'm staggered by that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is actually, for both teams, it is an important game. I mean, for Swansea, might be mistaken, but it could be, if they win this game, they will already have guaranteed their highest points tally in the history of the Premier League.
I think you're right, Philippe.
Actually, highest points tally since the great team of yesteryear. And as for Everton, you know, given the amount of stick that Roberto Martinez has had from Everton fans for a long, long time, it might be a means to make them shut up for a while.
Perhaps.
I'm convinced, and I'm actually may even go to the trouble of getting evidence to support this, that they've been the victim of more incorrect refereeing decisions this season than any other team. They should probably be hired. They should be challenging for Europe if luck, shall we say, have been on their side.
Right. Because
every time I've seen them, they've been the victim of horrendous decisions.
Really? Okay. Well, we'll see what happens.
It's not out of the question, actually, that they could still overtake Southampton, who seem to be on the slide, you know. So,
Well, having talked that game up magnificently, see what you can do with West Ham Stoke, which I was actually planning to get a whisk straight past that one. Let's talk then about Southampton, who are hosting Hull, Paul Doyle.
Hull, who could go down if one or more of the teams currently in the bottom three can mount a little bit of a late season rally, then Hull are the most likely to be sucked in, because they have a wretched fixture list.
Here's that fixture list again.
Yeah.
They have Saints away, then they host Liverpool, then they're at Crystal Palace, then they've got Arsenal, then they're against their direct relegation rivals Burnley, then they're at Spurs, and they finish off with Man United.
So you could say 0 points would be an entire surprise.
Certainly this weekend. You can't see them scoring against Southampton. Damon Doyle, who's been a shining light for them since he arrived last week at Swansea, he seemed to be in a terrible brood, and it was as if he was contaminated by the negative feeling around the place. And whether that was just a momentary lapse of interest, I don't know. We'll see at the weekend. But that's Hull's best hope is probably a 0-0 draw, because Southampton's problem, that they're still playing well in most areas of the pitch except up front, where Graziano Pelle obviously isn't finding a net. He's not getting a huge amount of support from out wide. And so Hull, who Mohamed Diame could be back for them, apparently, who will be important for them. He's not a goal getter, but he will give them a bit of solidity. But 0-0, I'd say, is their best hope. And of their fixtures, Burnley at home on May the 9th is the only one where you'd say that you'd make them gives them a good chance of getting three points.
Well, absolutely. They haven't beaten a team from the top half of the table all season, and they're about to face lots of them.
Yeah, they did play very well against Chelsea at home the other day, but that was probably their only decent performance in the last month or so.
I mean, their huge problem is scoring goals. It sounds silly to say that, but you see, defensively, they're a very sound unit, Hull. And I say
their keeper has been wobbly lately.
Okay, but you see that they actually have a better defence than Tottenham, for example.
Yeah.
Which is quite remarkable, but they do, and it's scoring goals. I mean, that's been a huge problem. I mean, 29 is not good enough.
I'm just writing down some of these numbers: how many points people are going to get, where they're going to be vis-a-vis the bottom three. Let's talk now about the game that you're going to be going to, Philippe, which is at Loftus Road, Chelsea. QPR, a revitalised QPR.
Yeah, I was talking to some fans of theirs, and they sounded strangely optimistic.
The Chelsea game?
Yes.
Well, they've won a game against Chelsea in each of the past two seasons. Now, they didn't win the first leg, so logic suggests it's going to be this one.
Absolutely. And if it's anything like the game I remember at Loftus Road, we finished 11-9 and they managed to get John Terry in prison, or almost. it would be something. But yes, you could imagine. I mean, they look, I don't know, completely different going forward, certainly, that they have for a while, scoring a number of goals. And as I said, the public really believes it.
Johnny Late believes it. He doesn't. Actually, Johnny Late doesn't believe it. Johnny Late says the real difference on Saturday, this was their very surprising 4-1 win away at West Brom, was starting Vargas.
Yeah.
For some reason, both Hapless Harry and Chris Ramsey have been reluctant to use him. So there must have been something going on behind the scene, because when he's featured, he's been excellent, particularly in partnership with his compatriot Isla. That he only lasted 25 minutes and will now miss the rest of the season will be a nail in R's coffin, though, says Johnny Late. At least Michael Hahn will be happier then. Of course, Sandro coming back in of late, and that's made a big difference.
Yeah, Vargas is a loss, and it was a feature of their other victory under Chris Ramsey this season away at Sunderland, that it was slightly Pyrrhic in that they lost Leroy Fair and Richard Dunn in that match. But those two apparently could be even back this weekend. And Fair in particular, if he is back this weekend or in the weeks after that, will help mitigate the loss of Vargas, because what they did without Vargas the other night was they put Phillips on the right, where he's just as effective. Cranchard came in on the left. I wouldn't have any long-standing hope of him proving a success there, but Fair can go in on the left where he had been playing prior to his injuries. So yeah, with Fair on the left and Phillips on the right, you got proper supply to their forwards and the goal threat themselves.
Right.
So there is hope for them. And Dunn coming back to defence adds a little bit of solidity to a defence that is still leaky. But, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, you talk about the players up front. Can Zamora manage 3 games in, what will it be, 8 days?
Nobody knows that. They take it, they wake him up in the morning and see if he can move. Mm. And if he can, he will. But that's been the case with him for quite a while, and he's still obviously very useful. So when he doesn't play, it deprives Joey Barton of that option of going long to him, which he does with quite a lot of regularity, and so they can have a slight upside, but you'd much rather have Zamora than not.
Right, Matt Phillips stat for you. Only Lionel Messi has assisted more goals than Matt Phillips in the top 5 European leagues so far this calendar year. Here's another QPR stat. It's 8. Yeah, Charlie Austin has been involved in 20 of QPR's 35 league goals this season, with 16 goals and 4 assists. What do you think then? Chelsea QPR, or rather QPR Chelsea, Barry?
Well, the thing about Jose Mourinho has a kind of an important decision to make, in that Emmanuel Matic and Fabregas are both one booking away from a 2-game ban. So does he play them? Because those 2 games are against Arsenal and
Man United's next, isn't it, for Chelsea? And then Arsenal.
And then Arsenal.
Yeah, so it'll be those two teams, yeah.
So does he play them against QPR and risk them getting a booking, or does he leave them out and hope that they'll have enough about them to win anyway?
Right. A game that generally has its fair share of bookings.
And Fabregas, of course, he had an operation on his nose, I think.
Did he?
Wasn't it him he broke his nose? Mm-hmm. In last weekend.
It was elbowed.
And Yeah, he had surgery on it, but he may well be fit anyway.
Right.
And play with a protective mask.
No Diego Costa, of course.
Yes, Loic Remy.
Yeah, but Loic Remy.
And give Rangers a reminder of what they're missing.
Absolutely. Pretty decent return, Loic Remy, every time he's been used by Jose Mourinho. They said, I mean, I've seen a lot of Chelsea this season, and over the last 3 months, to be honest, I think almost any team can get something against them. And I wouldn't be entirely surprised if QPR, you know, nicked a point from them.
Really?
No, I wouldn't be surprised. They seem... The reliance, I mean, talk about one-man team. I mean, they've been... It's been Eden Hazard plus 10, really, for a while now.
If you shackle Hazard...
That's very difficult.
I'd throw Willian into the mix there as well, especially this weekend.
Recently, more recently.
If Clint Hill is at left back and if Cranchar is on the left, then I'd expect Willian to revel.
Right. Of course, QPR, fresh from not just that amazing win last weekend, but also the remarkable game at Villa Park, which saw them end up with a 3-3 draw against Aston Villa. Not sure. That's a good point for QPR, less so for Villa, is that right?
You would think so, except I was following that with QPR supporters, and when the first goal went in, they thought, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. It's especially against that rabble, but that was just crazy. No, they, very important point. I mean, what have we got now? 26, and Villa 28 points only. That's extraordinary.
And this, of course, the biggest game that many Villa players will ever feature in, as Tim Sherwood described it. Prior to the game,
Chris Ramsey has done a really good job at QPR, because it was such a hospital pass he was given by Harry Redknapp, and he's really scrambled around for solutions. He's been like MacGyver locked in a garage, and he's tried all sorts of things. He's brought Tarap back from the wilderness. He's brought Sean Wright Phillips back from the wilderness, and then jettisoned them again. But finally, he seems to have got a formula. Having said that, he's still able to, and it's to his credit that when things aren't working, he keeps changing. And even in the Villa game the other night, he changed formation at the start of the second half to improve. And that's what you want a manager to do, make changes that influence proceedings.
Mm. Yeah, he also went and got some tickets for a fan who couldn't get any.
What a nice man.
Sweet. What a nice chap. It was a fan's dad, actually. Anyway, here's, I've got loads of stats today. Look, here's Mikael Jongsma actually supplying this one. Since Tim Sherwood became Aston Villa manager, no player has scored more Premier League goals than Christian Benteke. Wow. He's the new Emmanuel Adebayor. It's that whole paradigm all over again.
Right.
Villa, anyway, 3-3 it finished. And he must be exhausted after his touchline antics, Tim Sherwood. They're going to be at Spurs...
Who are not exactly flying at the moment, are they?
Well, they've won their last six clashes with Aston Villa.
Yeah, but it's a stat that almost everybody has against Aston Villa.
Right, yeah. Well, that's a big game for Tim. Tim's in the papers today complaining about how...
What's happened to him?
Well, know that when he was at Spurs, he was given an 18-month deal, but they made him feel like a supply teacher.
It's not very nice for supply teachers.
Well... Yeah, maybe he means he had them in form. I don't know. I don't know, but anyway, he's got a point to prove with his former employers, I think.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean that, like, when he was giving a dressing room speech, that the players would just sit there and hum? Which is what we used to do with supply teachers.
With supply teachers, yeah. I think it probably does.
I start inching their seats backwards, or when he turned his back to the tactics board, they sort of all changed seats quickly behind him to see if he'd notice when he turned around.
I hope so, Barry, yeah. Here's another big game. Burnley-Arsenal. Right.
Mm.
Oh, Burnley.
Mighty Burnley.
They've beaten Man City there at Turf Moor. They've held Spurs goalless. Now, can they put the brakes on Arsenal's high-flying Arsenal? Can they?
I doubt it.
Really? Why not?
Yes. Again, because I've seen a lot of Arsenal since the turn of the year, and they are mightily, mightily impressive, and probably in terms of the quality of the football, play the best team in the country at the moment.
In terms of the points, best team in the Premier League. No one's picked up more points in the Premier League. But we were...
Despite our love for Sean Dyche, which is well documented, and the fact that whatever happens, you know that Burnley will have absolutely no complex, and when they enter the pitch against the Arsenal, I mean they it's very difficult. You sense that they have got always an extra gear in position at the moment. All their big players are back, and all of them seem to be in absolutely superb form. It's almost as if, you know, they had the winter break. Well, Olivier Giroud had his break, full stop, and so had Mesut Ozil. He had his break. And they've been absolutely, Ozil in particular, has been absolutely magnificent of late.
This stat that we were looking at the other day, Barry, that Arsenal picked up in 2013, the back end of the 12-13 season and the first part of the 13-14 season, they picked up more points than,
yes,
than anybody else. Effectively, they were the champions of 2013. does that mean that Arsenal aren't as far off being real title contenders? Are they just 6 months out of sync with football?
I'd like Chelsea to start
point.
Dropping
I mean, maybe,
points.
Sorry?
I'd like Chelsea to start dropping points just to see how Arsenal react when the pressure of actually really being in the title race is
you
on.
Think it would have an adverse effect on them?
Well, I don't know. That's something that this team has to prove.
All right.
It's often been the case that when the pressure was off, Arsenal could suddenly, you know, be Arsenal. It's been the case in the Champions League on so many occasions. You know, all these wonderful games won away from home against Bayern Munich, at home against Milan, and so forth. And but unfortunately, they were already out of the tie when this happened. And it's a story that we've heard before. But on the other hand, in terms of the type of football that they're proposing, I don't think that they've been as consistently good as this for me since the 2007-2008 season.
Really? Yep. Okay. All right. Well, listen.
If I was Sean Dyche for this one, I think after having my cup of honey and lemon, I'd sort of sell it to the players as a kind of a bonus game, right? Because they've just played Liverpool, City, Southampton, and now they've this. So that's a tough run of games, and they've got 4 points out of it, which isn't a bad return. And after this, things get a lot easier for them. You know, they've Everton, Leicester, West Ham, Hull, Stoke, Villa. And I think they would be capable of taking points in every single one of those games and winning several.
And strangely enough, it almost appears as if there were no pressure on Burnley and Sean Dyche, because nobody would think, oh, it's a disaster if they get relegated.
Yeah.
They were promoted miraculously. They've got a very small wage bill. They haven't got the kind of players that other candidates for relegation have. And you could imagine, yeah, even if they go down, it has been, you know, great fun, and they'll be back.
And it helps that everyone likes Sean Dyche, everyone wants them.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of goodwill out there because he's just a good bloke and
so
a real ray of sunshine.
Just for my notes, and how many points are they going to get against Arsenal?
None.
Paul, you're saying none?
I'm saying none, yeah.
None. And Philippe, you very much said none. So they'll still be on 26. QPR, you think are going to get a point against Chelsea?
Yeah, I know I'm being silly, but why not?
Yeah, should we put that down? We'll put them over 27.
No. QPR, despite everything good I said about them earlier on, they have had a fatal slapstick quality all season, where just as things seem to be going in their favour, they score an own goal or get a red card or a horrendous piece of luck. It's
like that Liverpool game.
Yeah, and many others.
All right. Okay, Aston Villa, what were they going to do against Spurs then? That's at White Hart Lane.
Draw.
All right, so that puts them on 30. That would mean they'd be 4 points off the drop. Not bad. The one we haven't talked about is Leicester against West Brom. Now, I kind of assumed that that was problems resolved for West Brom with the advent of Tony Pulis and his exceptional run of results. Maybe the players made similar assumptions before last weekend's
and they won't this time around, that's
defeat.
For sure
they won't this time around. Alright, well, they're up against in-form Leicester,
who just, in-form Leicester,
yeah, they just picked up a win,
they one beat consecutive West. Win
yep,
yes.
There you go. So what do you think, back to normal service resumed?
Yes.
At Hawthorns?
Yes, absolutely.
Alright, because you know, if they were to slip up again, if they were, they also have a rotten run of fixtures on the way. They've got Liverpool, Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal. Those are 4 of their last 5 games. So, and they conceded 7 goals in their last 2 games. Isn't that remarkable for a Tony Pulis side?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so you think they'll be fine. And, right, okay, so pretty much no change down at the bottom, with the bottom 3 all losing, according to our predictions. Indeed, the bottom 4 all losing.
Could Newcastle be still dragged into it?
They are 9 points.
Can you see somebody? They're on 35 points.
Yeah.
Can you see?
To be just enough.
Yeah.
Nine points, yeah, and a lot of teams between them. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see.
You wonder if we're going to have a kind of record total of points for the regulated teams in terms of the lowest total ever.
I believe the lowest 34. Is 34, yeah. And incredible to think that Palace, Crystal Palace, twice relegated in very unfortunate circumstances. Once they were relegated despite not finishing in the bottom three, which when the Premier League went down from whatever, but it reduced its numbers. The first season of the Premier League, they were relegated with, I believe, 49 points. 49 points.
Really?
Well, it was a bigger division in those days.
It was 22 teams,
I think, didn't West Ham go down with 42?
42 when Trevor Brooking was in charge, yes.
Wow.
And that was, like, with 20 teams.
And this lot, we think it's going to be, what, 30? I mean, as you say, it could be less 30. Than 34.
It could be 30.
Wow. Anyway,
that means basically there's a very good chance several teams will stay up with less than 40 points, which is a pretty damning indictment on the quality. Like, I mean, there's some awful teams in that that won't aren't even in danger of being relegated,
and some terrific teams down in the Championship who sadly won't make it up to the top flight. We'll be talking about that a little bit more after this.
Guardian listeners get the latest news, but they can also create it. With our sponsor Squarespace, you can easily create an elegant website for your personal brand, online store, business, personal portfolio, or blog. Whoever you are, Squarespace's simple tools and elegant designs make your ideas newsworthy and accessible to any audience. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Okay, yes, that Championship. Because we were talking about this on Monday.
Yeah.
Pretty much sorted out what the situation was, and then they went and played again, completely messing everything up. Bournemouth beat Birmingham. They were 2-0 down and came out to win 4-2. Do you know they've now equaled their club record of 104 goals in a single season? That's already a lot of potential to increase that number significantly.
In all competitions.
In all competitions, absolutely, Philippe. They've got Brighton next. This Monday's game saw Blackpool officially down and Millwall in trouble. They're 7 points off safety. Are they hosting Watford, I think, this weekend? And Wigan, of course, the other team in real trouble. They're 8 points from staying up. And Marky Mackay's are now being sent on his way after their defeat to Derby, who are maybe rallying. A lot of people felt that they were going to slip their way out of the playoff positions, but perhaps not. Perhaps not.
You know, I'm looking at the moment at this thing, you know, the form guide, and you know, a win is a red, green. Excuse me, a defeat is a red, and a draw is grey. And usually, you've got patterns, and this looks like somebody's taken those pieces and just thrown them in the air, and they fell almost at random.
Philippe, if you stare at it long enough and unfocus your eyes,
yes,
yeah,
it's very disturbing.
You see an interesting picture
of Ian Holloway.
Exactly.
I mean, Watford must be one of the stories of the season. I mean, does anybody have any explanation how a club that changes and has, what, four managers now in a single season can suddenly be a genuine contender for promotion?
Because they've got so many people in form goal scorers, I think. They just can't stop scoring. I watched their match against Middlesbrough. They won 2-0 on Bank Holiday Monday. I did a minute-by-minute report. Hmm. Pretty impressive stuff. There was bad, sloppy defending cost Middlesbrough. Jonathan Woodgate made a bad mistake for the opener. So, and Troy. I think they've three different strikers who are all banging in goals. So,
I mean, one of their fans told me that Adlin Gadura had made a big difference. But.
Oh, he was superb against Middlesbrough. Yeah, he's just his deliveries from the touchline, superb, fantastic. He was the man of the match against Borough.
Presumably, if you can have a new manager bounce, they've just had it three times. So they just, every time things slip, they just bring in a new one.
Or maybe like the manager is overestimated.
Yeah, perhaps.
It's all about the players.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Although, if you look at what Alex Neil has done at Norwich, who were 11 points behind leaders Bournemouth when he took over in January, and they're now only 1 point behind Norwich.
Yeah.
It's very tight at the top, though.
Mm. Isn't the format, though, helping to make this championship even more exciting? Yeah, I'd like to see playoffs in the Premier League for the last Champions League spot, for example.
Right.
And, ooh.
That's a great shout.
It'd be fun.
Yeah. We'll get on that straight away. Now, in other news, Philippe, you're quite excited about Gabon being awarded the Africa Cup of Nations.
Yeah, it's absolutely extraordinary what happened
in
Cairo.
Ah.
Well, there were a number of things which happened in Cairo which were very funny. If you like gallows humour, they were quite funny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it started with Issa Hayatou, who's been in charge of the African Confederation since 1988, announcing that Africa would stand united behind Sepp Blatter. That gave the tone for the meeting. Then they decided that this idea of having an age limit for people on the executive committee was really silly. You know, 70 years of age, that's young. So
it's the new 60.
They scrapped it. And of course, Isaiah too is only 68. So that's good news for him. And then, but the funniest or most tragic thing is the way that Gabon, which he described as oil rich
and democratically challenged.
Yes, a country, another one of those. Got the organization of the 2017 Africa Cup of Nations, beating, to everybody's surprise, two very strong candidates, Ghana and Algeria. And one of the Ghanaian officials has since been on the record talking about the way in which the vote was conducted. And it appears that none of the people who voted have any idea of the exact number of votes each bid received. So Mr. Isaiah too went into a room with, obviously, with the ballots, a couple of mates, no cameras, and came out of the room saying, Gabon's won it. So that's it. Gabon's won it. And nobody knows how. And people are thinking, but I didn't vote for them.
Mm. They've hosted
so it's
it.
It's a bit strange.
They can't be that left field. People might look at the fact that they hosted it not that long ago. What, five? No,
it's
3 years ago.
2012, wasn't it?
Yeah, 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So they can't be that out of left field as a candidate, can they?
No, but the bids that were submitted by Ghana and right. Algeria were very, very strong indeed.
Plus the fact that they just hosted it, actually, on reflection, might suggest that it might be somebody
else's
turn.
Perhaps. So, yes, it was another great moment for transparency and democracy in world football at Cairo.
Now, you're being sarcastic, aren't you?
Oh, no, really?
Right, okay. Well, let's talk about other things then. Other things which include... Here's an amazing stat. Talked about that Messi and Mathieu one, about how many points their goals get. Mike Dalby says, because Ronaldo scored his 300th goal for Real Madrid and then controversially got booked for diving. But anyway, having got that goal, Mike Dalby says that after that, Cristiano Ronaldo could now play seven more seasons or 360 games more for Real Madrid without scoring in a single one of them, and he would still have a better goals-to-game ratio than Real Madrid legend Raul. I don't have these numbers in front of me, but Paul Doyle, you reckon that could be true?
Well, yeah. I can't remember what I said.
You said he's got more than a goal a game, and yeah.
Good.
Okay. In other foreign business, Coppa Italia finalists will be Juventus and Lazio after Juve mulled Fiorentina 3-0. Lazio beat Napoli. Some people are talking about Rafa Benitez to Man City. Napoli have two draws from their last five games in all competitions, scoring one goal in that time. I don't know how many people would be sad to see Rafa go down in Naples. Philippe, you say yes, like that's something you've heard, this business of him turning up at the Etihad.
Yes, I've heard a few things about that. Mm. Certainly, if Napoli don't qualify for the Champions League, which looks increasingly likely, not to say certain, that we all know that Benitez has always wanted... come back to the country where his family still lives.
All right.
And it could be a very interesting stopgap, do a bit same kind of job that he did at Chelsea, which he did, I should say, brilliantly at Chelsea after Di Matteo was sacked.
Right. Stopgap because they're waiting for somebody big.
Well, they went in for 2016 and the end of Pep Guardiola's contract with Bayern Munich.
I hear you. All right. Roma have been given a one-game ban, or the Curva Sud in the Stadio Olimpico has been given will be closed for one game after their appalling banner at the weekend against Napoli. In Germany, there's another Klassiker coming up in the semi-finals of the Pokal, the German Cup, after Dortmund made it through past Hoffenheim. Brilliant goal by Seb Kjaer. Did you see this?
No.
Banner this year? Oh, worth seeking out. Worth seeking out. That, anyway, puts them through to a clash with Bayern Munich. Whilst in the other semi-final, it's going to be Wolfsburg against a team from the third tier, Arminia Bielefeld, who've put out three Bundesliga sides so far. If they do that again, as Archie Rintut was pointing out, they'll be in the final. What a story.
Mm.
What a story. In France, meanwhile, you had a cup semi-final.
Yes.
On Wednesday night?
Yes, yesterday night, absolutely, in which PSG walloped Saint-Etienne in no uncertain fashion. 4-1, Zlatan show again. Three goals. I mean, one in particular was just wonderful.
What did you do, Philippe?
Well, it was a very tough one-on-one with Ruffier, who is one of the best keepers in Liga. I think you'll agree with me. And the angle looked absolutely impossible. So what he did is he did what we call a grand pont in French, a long bridge, which is you pass the ball on the other side of the keeper of your opponent, you run around him and hit it, which he did in a very, very tight angle, and also with Saint-Etienne defender coming back like a train. And the way he did it, the balance, and he whacked the ball afterwards was absolutely magnificent. So three goals for him again, and he's now only 7 goals behind Pauleta, the great legend, in terms of the highest goal scorer in the history of Paris Saint-Germain, which is something. But he was not the best player on the pitch. I mean, Javier Pastore was.
Oh, really?
Was superb, yeah. Absolutely superb.
Because Pastore can drift in and out of games, and certainly...
He drifted in.
He drifted in.
I can tell you that. And they now look, you know, it's quite extraordinary. They can still do a quadruple.
A quadruple,
it's
right.
It's quite extraordinary. Well,
they're into the final now. They're going to be playing Auxerre.
Playing Auxerre, absolutely.
In the French Cup final. The League Cup finals this Saturday, where they're playing
Bastia.
Which they must be massive favourites for.
For both games.
Right.
They're 1 point ahead of Lyon. That might be a bit more difficult
league.
In the league.
Mm.
And of course, they're playing against Barcelona in the quarters.
That's next week. Mm. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that, because they've gone close against Barca before.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got real problems coming into this one after the Classique at the weekend, losing Thiago Motta and David Luiz. And who else has gone out now? Marco Verratti's now injured as well.
Yes, Zlatan will be also suspended.
But not for the Champions League.
He's suspended for the first leg.
Oh, he's suspended for the first leg after...
Yes.
Is he?
Getting.
You're right. No, you're absolutely right. He is. He's suspended for the first leg, which is at home.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely.
What do you think then?
I don't know what to think about PSG anymore, because I think it's been such a seesaw of a season for them. At times you saw them, you thought this is a disaster of a team. You know, they don't look like a team at all. At other times they look, I mean, you can be quite enthusiastic about some of the football they've proposed. And you wonder, is it because of Blanc? Is it because, as people say, a number of players have basically taken over power in the dressing room and are calling the shots? But in any case, the results are quite spectacular. Again, some of their players, as I said, Pastore seems to have found his form at the right time. But that's an awful lot of absentees, I think.
Yeah.
Particularly from midfield, which is, well, everyone talks about Ibrahimovic. Their midfield of Matuidi, Verratti and Motta.
Yeah, which is one of the best in European football. I think we all agreed on that.
And if two-thirds of that is missing, that's a huge setback.
There is a chance Verratti might be fit. I think they're talking about 10 days, and it is more or less 10 days.
Yeah, it didn't look too good, though.
No, okay. No. Wow. It's going to be quite a game, that. Of course, they've already overcome they've already got their revenge on Chelsea, so it'll be interesting to see if they can...
Verratti is suspended too, you know.
Oh, is he?
Yes.
All right, well...
Pretty sure we can check. Producer Pete will check, but I'm pretty sure Massimo Verratti is... Marco Verratti is suspended. Now, the other thing for PSG, I mean, we talk about Zlatan, how important he is, but... I think they're going to be a bit nervous today, because today is the meeting of the disciplinary commission of the French FA. And you might have heard about some words that Zlatan had for a referee after the defeat at Bordeaux. They were not too complimentary towards the referee, or indeed towards France as a whole. He risks and probably will get four games banned, and they would all be Ligue 1 games.
Really? So the cup, if he gets it today, won't the cup final...
It's French in France is not the same system.
Oh, okay, so it's just league games.
Absolutely.
So how many league games do they have left, Philippe?
Seven,
yeah. Right, okay.
So he would miss...
four of them, yeah.
Yeah, he would miss, which is, you know, given the importance of Zlatan, and given also the situation...
With injuries.
With injuries, absolutely. It could be a bit complicated.
Wow, all right.
So you could meet, I can tell you, actually, the games against at Nice, against Lille at the Parc des Princes, against Metz at the Parc des Princes, and at Nantes. So it's not exactly the most terrifying fixtures, but still.
Right. Verratti is suspended. You're absolutely spot on for the first leg against Barcelona. Well, that Champions League business, we'll be talking more about that next week, of course. Barry?
In other disciplinary news... after the shenanigans at the Russia-Montenegro game. Russia have been handed a 3-0 win, and Montenegro have been fined £36,000 or €50,000. And Croatia have been fined the same amount for their supporters' poor behaviour in a match against Norway. And Croatia and Montenegro both have to play a game behind closed doors.
And there you go.
So Croatia-Italy will be behind closed doors in June, which would be rather surreal. So,
well, yeah, a lot of the Italian players are used to playing in empty stadiums. But, Philippe, sorry.
No, so it's obviously a great moment for European football with also the attack of the bus in Turkey and Torpedo Moscow as well, I think, being suspended.
Oh, what happened to them?
Nazi chants and banners and things like that for the fourth time. It's just absolutely insane.
Yeah. Well, that's the situation on Planet Football on this Thursday. We'll be back with an update for your listeners on Monday. Many thanks for being with us today. Many thanks to producer Pete, guest producer Pete, who's been in for producer Ben, Barry, Paul Doyle, and Philippe Eau Claire. Have yourselves a super weekend, and we'll catch up with you after. Bye-bye.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the simplest, most powerful website creator that helps you make headlines with your own stunning online presence. Explore elegant templates, Getty image integration, and more at squarespace.com, and use the code Guardian to get 10% off.